Okay, Mishnah Tazayin Amid Aleph at the bottom.
No
Mishnah. No Mishnah. Very interesting Gemara. Tazayin Amid Aleph at the bottom. Four lines in the bottom of the page. The Gemara is now going to discuss the first argument that ever existed in Torah. He's sitting here. The Gemara is discussing the first argument that ever happened in Torah. The Gemara says as follows, Yesi ben Yezer Eimer, Yesi ben Yezer, and this we have these groups mentioned in Pirkei Avos in the first Perek. Yesi ben Yezer, Yesi ben Yechanan. Tezayin Amid Aleph, four lines from the bottom of the page, all the way at the bottom of the page. Here comes a soccer recorder.
Does that work?
You have to stay.
Okay, Yesi ben Yezer says the following.
Record the game.
Shalelismich. There's a din. Okay, there's a din. When you bring a korban in the base of Migdash, the Torah says v'samach yodai. You have to put what's called smicha. You have to put your hands on it. But in according to halacha, when you put your hands on the animal, you had to use your whole force. Basically, you leaned on the animal. It wasn't just you stood there and touched the animal. When the Torah said you had to do smicha, you had to lean actually very strongly on the animal. Now there's a din, the Chachamim, as we'll soon learn, the Chachamim made a rabbinic decree that you're not allowed to use an animal on Shabbos. Because if you ride an animal on Shabbos, you might come to rip off a branch from a tree, which is biblically forbidden to use it as a whip. So therefore the Chachamim forbid any usage of animals on Shabbos, or Yom Tov. So now the question is, if somebody brings a korban, normally you have to do smicha. So the question is, can you do it on Yom Tov or not? And this was the first argument, basically, that took place in Torah. Tosfos mentions there were other arguments, but this is the first primary argument that took place. So Yesi ben Yezer.
What about petting your animal?
Domestic animal.
You could touch it, you can't move it.
You can pet it, but it doesn't move.
You can pet it, but you can't move it. Yesi ben Yezer, Eimer, Yesi ben Yezer says, Shalei l'smich. You don't do smicha. Let's learn a little bit. Yesi ben Yechanan, Eimer, Yesi ben Yechanan says, l'smich, you should do smicha. And the Gemara is going to explain the reason of it. The same thing, the next generation, the same argument took place. Yeshua ben Prachi, Eimer, Shalei l'smich. Yeshua ben Prachi said not to do smicha. Nite Arbeli, who is his counterpart, said to do smicha. Yehuda ben Tabi, Yehuda Yehuda ben Tabi says, Shulei lismich, don't do smicha. Shimon ben Shatach says, lismich, you do smicha. Shmaya Eimer lismich, these are the rabbis of Hillel and Shammai. Shmaya says, you do smicha. Avtalion Eimer, Shulei lismich, you don't do smicha. Hillel and Shammai, I'm sorry, Hillel and Menachem, Hillel and Menachem, what? Putting your weight on the animal before bringing a carbon. Okay. No, that.
What do you mean by moving it?
An animal is muktzah on Shabbos.
This is moving.
This is called moving.
But you can.
Yeah, but you can't pick it up and move it. You can't pick up an animal on your Shabbos or Yom Tov.
Any muktzah.
Right. Now, Hillel and Menachem, the Gemara is going to say, instead of Hillel and Shammai, originally it was Hillel and Menachem. So the same thing. Hillel and Menachem loy nachluku. The Gemara is going to explain who Menachem was. The Gemara says Hillel and Menachem didn't argue, but Yotze Menachem and Nichna Shammai. When Menachem left and Shammai took over, Shammai emer shalei lismich. Shammai said not to do smicha. Hillel emer lismich. Hillel said you have to do smicha. So basically, this was in every generation there was an argument: do you do smicha? Don't you do smicha? Then the Mishnah continues and says, Harishenim, the first of each group, which was mentioned, are the Nesiim, the leaders, Shniim Lahem, the second to them was Av Bezdin, the head of the Bezdin. Meaning as follows, and this, by the way, when you learn Pirkei Avos, you have the same double names throughout the first Perek. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when the big Bezdin existed, the Bezdin of 71, the leader of the Jewish people, the leader of the Jewish people, was called the Nasi. They didn't have kings, so he was called the prince of the Jewish people. The second greatest was called the Av Bezdin, the head of the Beis Din. Because the way they used to sit was the Nasi sat in the middle, the Av Beis Din next to him, and the rabbis of the Beis Din sat around in a semicircle. That they should.
How does that get picked?
Well, it depends. But Shilhilul became the Nasi because the leaders of the Jewish people at that time forgot a halach and Hillel remembered it. So they appointed him as the leader of the Jewish people. Pesach Shecholi is B'Shabbos, if you bring a carbon Pesach on that. So the Mishnah says the first ones were the Nasiim and the second one was the Av Beis Din. Okay?
The Nasi had to have the lineage too, no?
The Nasi, most of them had lineage. Shmai and Naphtali were Gedim, so they didn't have lineage. Okay, now they were literally the greatest sages, except appointed its leaders, the Beis Din appointed them as their leaders. So the chief justice was called the Nasi, the second, the assistant the chief justice, so to speak, was called the Av Beis Din. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan learned.
The chief justice is the Nasi?
The chief justice is the Nasi.
It's not Av Beis Din, he is not the chief justice.
Right.
Well, why is it a problem in the base of Migdash to do malachas?
That's a separate issue we'll see later. The Cheder, there's no Shvus in the Migdash. So the question, why does this din apply over here? But the fact is it does apply. We'll see later in the Gemara. Now Tesis explains that really this is not the first Machlekes. Okay, but Tesis says they already did in the days of Shaul HaMelech, there was already an argument in Halacha between David and Shaul. So Tesis over there says that the fact that it was only David HaMelech's logic rather than everybody's, it wasn't even called an argument. But this was down the middle. In each generation, the head and the second head argued whether you do smicha or not. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan learnt. Shleishim Izugas Arishenis, the three sages of the first three groups, Sha'amru Shalei Lismich, said not to do smicha, and the two from the last group that said to do smicha. So he says, Harishenim hayu nesiim, the first ones were the leaders, and the second one were Aveis Bezdin Divrei Rab Meir. Rab Meir says that the first three of the first three groups were the leaders, the Nasi, the second ones mentioned were the Av Bezdin, and the second one was the reverse. The Chachamim argue, and they say, Yehuda ben Tabai was the Av Beis Din, and Shimon ben Shatach was the Nasi. Meaning, according to Rav Meir, Shimon ben Shatach was the Av Beis Din, and Yehuda ben Tabai was the Nasi.
They're talking about certain date and time?
In that generation. If you take in Pirkei Avos,
but if it's in their own generation, why wouldn't they remember?
Oh no, this is much later.
Much later.
Four generations later. Maybe more. But the Gemara says, Man, Tana, which opinion hold of the Braisa Lahadu Tan Rabbanon? And I have to explain this Gemara before we learn it inside. There is a din called Edom Zeimimin. We learned about this in the whole Gemara Makis. We learned a lot about it. But again, to review it briefly, Edom Zeimimin is a scenario as follows. Two people come to Beis Din. Two people come to court, two witnesses. And they say, Sunday morning, we saw Reuven kill Shimon. Tazayin Amid Beis. On Sunday morning, 9 o'clock, in L.A., we saw Reuven kill Shimon. Therefore, what do they want? That Reuven should be put to death for killing Shimon. Comes along another group of witnesses, a second group of witnesses, and says to the first group the following. How could you two testify that you saw the murder Sunday morning, 9 o'clock, in L.A., when Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, you were with us in Hawaii? So how could you testify that you saw the murder, that you saw the witnesses, the murder, Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in L.A., when Sunday morning you were with... They don't say if the murder happened or not. For instance, if two witnesses say, Reuven killed Shimon, And another two witnesses say Levi killed Shimon. So what happens? They cancel each other out, and there are no witnesses. It's like there are no witnesses at all. Here there's an interesting halacha, what's called Gzeiras HaKosev, completely illogical. And the Torah says, we always believe the second group of witnesses. What do you do to the first group of the witnesses? You do to them what they wanted to do to the one they testified against. That means, two witnesses testified Reuven killed Shimon. So what do they want to testify? That Reuven should get killed. So you kill them. Them. Both witnesses. Both witnesses testified. You kill both witnesses. But the din is, that's only though, if you didn't kill Reuven yet. If Beznin already put Reuven to death for the murder, you don't kill the witnesses. Which officially, it's an illogical gzer sakosif. Okay?
He was meant to die for something
huh?
else. If it happened, he was meant to die for something else. And maybe we still will take care of those even zaymin otherwise.
One second. Now, the apikursim, the guys who didn't believe in the oral Torah, they said that the only way you kill the witnesses is if the guy was killed. But if he wasn't killed, you don't kill him. Oral tradition teaches us no. Kashizamam vale kashirasa. You can only kill the witnesses if they wanted to kill Reuven, but the Bezdin did not actually kill Reuven yet. Okay? Now the case of Shimon ben Shatach that we're going to learn now in the Gemara was as follows. Yudah ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shatach. Yudah ben Tabai. Oh, let me just say one more thing. What happens though, if two witnesses come and testify that Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in LA, Reuven killed Shimon. Another two witnesses come and say to one of the two witnesses, you were with us in Hawaii. Now what do you do to that one witness?
Or the other.
So Yehuda ben Tabai killed that witness. He killed him. He said he's an Eid Zaymim. He's a false witness. He wanted to put the death penalty on Reuven, so he killed him. Shimon ben Shatach said to him, you killed an innocent person. Because in order to accomplish the din of Edom Zemimin, you have to disqualify both of them. And you only disqualified one. And therefore you had no right to kill him, and you killed an innocent person. That's the story that took place. So Yehuda ben Tabai killed an Eid Zaymim for wanting to kill somebody else to say, hey, you see the Apikursim, the non-believers are wrong because they say you don't kill him until the guy is actually put to death. And here I showed I'm going to kill him even before the guy was put to death. But the problem was he only killed one witness. And now let's see inside the Gemara. Man Tana Lohoda Tana Rabbanon, which Tana learns this price that says the following din. Amr Rabbi Yudah ben Tabai said, Ereb ben Nechama may I see consolation. Meaning, he should, so to speak, he wanted to speak negative. He should never see consolation. Im le'arakti a zaymim, if I did not execute a zaymim, individual witness, for testifying false. Le'heitzi mili ben shal tzedukim, to counter the view of the tzedukim, of the non-believers, that said, Ain Adam Zaymer Minadogim, you don't kill the witnesses. Until the culprit is killed, meaning the one that did the murder, according to their testimony, is killed. So he said, you see what I did? I proved Torah correct, and I killed him even before the guy was put to death. Like really the halacha is. Amalei Shimon ben Shatach. So Shimon ben Shatach said to Yehuda ben Tabai, you killed an innocent person. He screamed at Yehuda ben Tabai. He said, why do you put this guy to death? You did it, you killed an innocent person. Why? Because the Chachamim say, the sages say, and Adam Zemimin Narogim, you cannot kill Adam Zemimin to these false witnesses, Achi Yuzuma Shneem, unless if they're both disqualified. And you can't give them lashes, Achi Yuzuma Shneem, until they both become disqualified. And they can't make payments of money until you zoom shneim, until you disqualify both witnesses. Meaning as follows. What happens if two witnesses come and say, we saw Yankel eating chazer Sunday morning in LA. So what do they want Yankel to get? Lashes for eating chazer. Then they become disqualified. The guy said, how could you see him in L.A. eating chazer? You were with us in Hawaii eating chazer. I mean, no, on the beach. Yeah? So what do you do to the witnesses? You whip him. Because that's what they wanted to do to the guy. How many lashes do they get? 39 each. In other words, you don't divide it 50-50 between the witnesses. Mm-hmm. By money is a different din. What happens if two witnesses testify, we saw Reuven borrow money from Shimon Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in L.A. So what are they testifying? That Reuven owes Shimon $1,000. Then they became disqualified. So what do? The din is each one only pays $500.
Each one of the witnesses?
Yeah. Because they wanted the guy to pay $1,000. So over there, the Gemara learns out of Malkus, in Malkus, Mishal Shalom B'Mammon, money they split percentage-wise, but by Mesa or by Malkus, each one gets the full amount.
No, I'm puzzled here. How could one judge put somebody to death? Don't you need a payment of 23?
Correct. But you're right. Yehuda ben Tabai had the Bezdin, but he was the head of that Bezdin. He was the head of the Bezdin. So it's called on his name, so to speak. So Shimon ben Shatach, who wasn't there, said to him, you killed an innocent guy by your decision. Your court was wrong. Because you weren't allowed to kill this guy, because they only disqualified one of the two witnesses, and the din of Adam Zemimin doesn't apply until you make them both disqualified.
But isn't it true that the Beis Din actually executes someone that they call a bad Beis Din? They really executed
anybody,
right? The
Beis Din. Rarely, a Beis Din killed somebody in 7 years. But the Gemara says in Makkos, not Makkos. The Gemara says that in fact it was Shimon Meshatach killed 80 witchcrafters in one day.
Without a court case.
There was an epidemic of witchcraft, and he had to stop it. So he killed 80 witchcrafters in one day. So the Gemara asked, "But you're not allowed to kill more than one person in a day." My answer is there was a unique situation. You have to get rid of him. I'll give you an example. I'm a Chicagoan. Mm-hmm. My mayor is Mayor Daley. Mm-hmm. The old one. Mm-hmm. Oliver Sholem. Now, in the riots in the 60s, not many of you, not all of you were born then, but in the 60s, in the riots, there were riots in New York, and riots in L.A., and there were riots in Chicago.
All the same time?
Yeah.
All at the same time?
Yeah. So in New York, Lindsay then was the mayor. He said, okay, let the Schwarzes go, you know, listen. So the riots went on for weeks. Daley, as soon as the riots started, told the cops, shoot to kill. The shoot to kill. It stopped in 10 minutes. Okay? That's my mayor. Why am I saying this? Because according to Alochi, he was right. I mean, theoretically. The marshal, if somebody steals, you can't kill somebody for stealing. It's clear in the Torah. It doesn't say you get for killing somebody, you get killed. But you don't get killed for stealing. But the Gemara learns, and it's a din shulchan aruch, what happens if Beis Din sees there's an epidemic of stealing and is getting out of hand and there's no way to control it. And the only way of controlling is say the next one that steals is going to get killed. Beis Din has a right to do it and kill the next guy that steals.
So they're ready to chop their hands.
Yeah. They take it literally, yad tachas yad, hand for hand. But no, I'm saying in halacha, there's a basis in halacha that if somebody does something more than the Torah, even though the Torah says you shouldn't be getting killed for it, the Torah says if there's an epidemic, you could do it. So sometimes I'm saying, what I'm saying, even though you're not allowed to kill more than one person in a day, but Shimon Shattach had a power of Bezdin to make exceptional cases to stop an epidemic or things that were going on. But
by who then Tamar also knows when he says she should be burnt?
No, Rashi says Bas Kain. I
said.
Yeah.
Sorcerers.
Sorcerers, witchcraft, yeah. Okay, so now, so the Gemara says, Miyad, so Yehudim and Tabai realized it made a big mistake. So Miyad, Kibul, all of Yehudim and Tabai. So immediately Yehudim and Tabai accepted upon himself, She'ena meira halacha ela b'fnei Shimon ben Shattach. He will never make a halachic ruling only in the presence of Shimon ben Shattach. That means, why did he make a wrong ruling? Because Shimon ben Shattach wasn't there. So Yehudah ben Tabai said, look what I did, I killed an innocent person for no reason. So he swore to himself that he's never going to make a halachic ruling only in the presence of Shimon ben Shattach. And the Gemara continues, Kol yamav shel Yehudah ben Tabai, for the rest of Yehudah ben Tabai's life, ha'imishtateach al kivrei shel Eisi Horik, he would go and prostrate himself, meaning daven, at the grave of the person that he killed, of the innocent person that he killed. Nishma, and his voice would be heard from the grave. And the Gemara says, Kesvurim ha'am leimar, the people thought, who was it? Shekele shel ahorog hoyo. That was the voice coming from the grave. That's what they thought.
The dead guy.
Right. And as the Mefarshim explain, Rashi says in Makis, that obviously, why didn't they go look at the grave and see where the voice is coming from? It says at night they heard the voice coming from the grave. And they said it was the voice of the guy that got killed. Amalehem, so Yehudah ben Tabai said to them, no, Kelihu, it's my voice that you hear crying. And he said, Tedo, I'll even prove it to you. Shalemachod, Mhumais, tomorrow I'm going to die. V'ein Kelen Nishman, you'll see the voice won't be heard anymore from the grave. In other words, a voice kept coming out of the grave. So the people thought it's the guy that was killed. So Yehudah ben Tabai said, no, it's my voice crying. And I'll prove it to you because when I die, tomorrow, meaning not tomorrow, whenever I die, you'll see that the voice stopped. And the Gemara Taka says, that's Taka what happened. As soon as Yehudah ben Tabai died, the voice came out. The voice stopped. So Sam the Gemara asked parenthetically, so Rav Acha, the son of Rav, asked Rav Ashi, how do you know? Maybe it's still the voice of the killed guy. Why did it stop when Yehudah ben Tabai died? Maybe Duma Paisa Pursui. He went up to heaven and appeased him. So he stopped crying. Or Bedina Tabai. Or he summons them to come to court. You know, to summon the dead witness and to receive satisfaction. The Gemara doesn't answer it, but obviously the Gemara says, Yehudah ben Tabai said it's my voice. Yeah? So what was he denying? Yehudah ben Tabai said it's his voice. He's going to say, no, it's the dead guy's voice. All he's saying is, you can't prove it from the fact that Yehudah ben Tabai died and the voice stopped, that it was Yehudah ben Tabai's voice. Because maybe it was the deceased's voice. He went up to heaven, he quieted him down. But how do you know that as a proof? But the fact that Yehudah ben Tabai said it's his voice. The Gemara is not doubting that. Anyway, this is the story the Braisa brings down. So now the Gemara says, Mani ha, who's the author of this Braisa? Why? Iyamid b'shleimer Rab Meir, if it's Rab Meir's opinion, like Rab Meir said that what? Shimon ben Shattach was Av Bezdin. And Yehudah ben Tabai was a Nasi. That means Yehudah ben Tabai was the leader. Haynu de kameira halacha b'fnei Shimon ben Shattach. That's why Yehudah ben Tabai is able to make a ruling in the presence of Shimon ben Shattach. I'll explain in a second. Eli Amid v'Rabbanan, but according to the Rabbanan, that says Yehudah ben Tabai was the head of the Bezdin, and Shimon ben Shattach was the number one man, and Yehudah ben Tabai was number two. Av Bezdin b'fnei Nasi mi meira halacha. How could an Av Bezdin make a ruling in the presence of number one? There's a din in halacha as follows. We learned that from Chumash, by the way. Hamerida halacha b'fnei rabbi. If somebody makes a halachic ruling in the presence of his rabbi, chayiv misa's capital punishment. You're not allowed to make a halachic ruling in the presence of your rabbi. Now, if you have Nasi and Av Bezdin, Nasi's number one man, Av Bezdin is number two. Okay? Now, what did Yehuda ben Tabai say? I'm never going to rule, I'm never going to make a ruling unless if Shimon ben Shatach is there. So if Yehuda ben Tabai was number one, like the mayor says, and Shimon ben Shatach was number two, that's why Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai is able to make a ruling, because he was number one. He says, you know what? From now on, I will never make a ruling without the number two man there. But if it's reverse, that Shimon ben Shatach was number one, like the Chachamim hold, and Yehuda ben Tabai was number two, how could Yehuda ben Tabai say, I won't make a ruling unless if Shimon ben Shatach is there? If Shimon ben Shatach is there, he's not allowed to make a ruling. Because Shimon ben Shatach is number one, and he's only number two. And number two cannot make a halachic ruling in front of number one, because it's his Rebbe. In other words, the Nasi can make a ruling in the presence of Av Bezdin, because he's number one. But the Av Bezdin cannot make a ruling in the presence of the Nasi. So if Yehuda ben Tabai says, I'm never going to make a ruling unless if Shimon ben Shatach is there, that must mean that Yehuda ben Tabai is number one, Shimon ben Shatach is number two, which would allow him to make a halachic ruling, and he says, I'm not going to do it. But if it's the reverse, that Shimon ben Shatach is number one, and Yehuda ben Tabai is number two, how could Yehuda ben Tabai make a ruling in the presence of Shimon ben Shatach? He's not allowed to. You can't make a ruling in the presence of your Rebbe. So the Gemara answers, by the way, like my kibble of the Kamel is tarufei, to join sitting on a court. Meaning, afilu it's tarufei, namile mitztarfina. What Yehuda ben Tabai said, I'm not going to sit on a court unless the Shimon ben Shatach is there. He didn't mean I'm going to make a ruling in the presence of Shimon ben Shatach. He meant I won't sit on a court unless Shimon ben Shatach is sitting there with me on the bezd, and then I feel comfortable doing it. We learned in Makkos, it's a Mishnah Sanhedrin, but there's an interesting halacha. In order to kill somebody, you need, like you said, a minimal bezdin of 23. To do monetary laws, 3 is enough. A court of 3. To kill somebody, you need a bezdin of 23. After the court hears the case, and you need to follow the majority opinion, it's a very interesting halacha. By death sentence, by death penalty, they started from the youngest judge. Youngest, I don't mean in years, I mean the least knowledgeable. From the lowest, they went up to the highest. Why? Because the Torah says you need the majority of opinions. But you need to say your opinion, not somebody else's opinion. If the head of the Bezdin, the chief rabbi, is going to say his opinion first, everybody's going to say, then obviously he's right, so I'm going to say what he said. Then you don't have their opinions, you have his opinion. So the halacha is, you start from the youngest. The oldest couldn't care less what the youngest says. So the youngest says his opinion, next guy says his opinion, next guy. And then finally, the last guy, the greatest, says his opinion. And then you go, who, majority opinion.
Why is it only like capital punishment?
Because by mominus, we don't care. And by monetary dinim, the judges also won't care to argue with them. When it comes to killing somebody, you know, nobody wants to kill somebody. To take money from somebody, it's not a big deal. You know why? You make a mistake, you get back the money. If you kill somebody by mistake, what are you going to do? Go to his grave and spend the dime there? No, it's a very simple thing. Money, people, they make a mistake, they'll give back the money. I mean, it's not something that it's a permanent decision, so to speak, to kill somebody. So over there you have to be more, that's why you need a Bezdin of 23. You need more...
with a majority of two.
No, 23.
It's not a majority.
No, no, no. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, no, is that the whole court was 23.
Oh.
In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there are different size courts. Okay, there's a court of 3, there's a court of 5, there's a court of 11. It was always an odd number, by the way. And then larger cities had a court of 23.
Was it higher than that?
Yeah, the Bezin in Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash was 71.
Yeah,
71. Okay, that was the Supreme Court. In fact, this explains, by the way, we just learned in the Mishnah, whether you do smicha, don't do smicha, that is the first argument that ever existed in Halacha. Why weren't there arguments before that? Or why was this one argument that carried itself down for so many generations, and there was no other difference of opinions in Halacha? The answer, like the Rambam writes in his introduction, in the olden times when you had the big Bezdin, any questionable Halacha eventually ended up in the Supreme Court. Right? They fought it out, discussed it, voted, and the Torah says the majority opinion. That's it. Once they ruled, that's it. They ruled in Halacha, that's it. So what do you mean you have different opinions? You have different opinions, you go to the head Bezdin, eventually you make a decision. Right? After the Bezdin stopped, and the Jews were in Golus, and, you know, everything was a mishmash, so then different opinions started going. Or even before then, the Gemara says, even Hillel and Shammai only argued in 4 dinim. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue in tens of dinim. Many, many halachas they argue in. Why? Because they didn't serve the scholars as much as they should have, so they started making wrong opinions, and different opinions, arguments. So the Gemara says, this is what the story is. Okay, now the Gemara continues. It says, first was Hillel and Menachem, and then it says, Menachem left and Shammai came. What?
Just one point. How far, to what extent does it go, you're not allowed to be Meir Halacha in front of your Rav? Like in the same city?
Up to 4 mil.
Up to 4 mil?
One of the reasons, one of the concepts, that today you get smicha, you get ordained as a rabbi. What's the union of smicha today? So the guys of Chesh Mishpat, right? In the olden times, there was called smicha ish mi pi ish Meisha Rabbeinu, which doesn't exist today. Meisha Rabbeinu anointed Yeshua, and Yeshua anointed Zkenim and Zkenim. They had the smicha, they were given the holy powers for Meisha Rabbeinu to make rulings. Today, what do you get? You know, you go to yeshiva, you get smicha, because you get ordained as a rabbi. What's that? That's not the smicha that they had in the time of the Gemara. Well, so some poskim write, because if your rabbi gives you smicha, that is a giving permission that you can make halachic rulings, even if he's in the city, or out of the city. But that's the whole question. Does it only apply to the guy you got smicha from? Not. It's a whole... whole issue involved in this.
That's what applies today.
Yeah. What?
Each court, for each case, they have one set of judges, or there are different judges for different cases?
It depends. In the cities, they had an established bezin of 3. Today, it's a whole mishmash. A bezin, a city had to have at least a bezin of 3. Not every city had to have 23. Yeah, yeah. Basic. In those days, it was established judges.
Did they have attorneys too?
No. No attorney.
Huh?
How
did they become that position? How did that position be?
By learning. No, what happened was, the way it worked in the Bezdin, the big Bezdin 71. Let's see, the Nasi passed away. So the Av Bezdin became the Nasi. Then the number 3 became number 2, and number 4 became 3, and then they added one guy later. But today, technically, if you have a court case, you pick 3 people, technically not even rabbis. You pick any 3 people, and you both accept them, it could be a court.
Yeah,
that the halachic ruling of a court that you have to listen to. But in the old cities, they had, I mean, you know, in the time of the Gemara, it says, Sheftim v'sheitim titin l'chol b'chol she'aracha. In every gate there's a pasuk in Chumash, you need to appoint judges. Okay, now the Mishnah said that Hillel was first together with Menachem, and then Menachem went out, and they put Shammai in instead. Then it became the famous Hillel and Shammai. So the Gemara says, Yotze Menachem v'nechne Shammai. So the Gemara says, Menachem left the Sanhedrin, and Shammai took his place. So the Gemara said, Leichen Yosef, where did he go to? Where did Menachem go off to? So the Gemara says, Rava Amar Rava says, Yotze Letar Basra. He joined the Bat Society. Literally means he became the Baitusim. He left the path of Yiddishkeit. Rava Amar, Yotze L'Avedus HaMelech. He went to enter the service of the king. King Herod heard this. There was a Jewish king heard this. They bring down over here a story that when Herodias was a young boy, Herodias did not come from royal blood. Herodias became a king because of his power. He was not in the lineage of David HaMelech. When Herodias was a young boy, this Menachem met him and said, with prophecy, you're going to be a king one day. So after Herodias became king, he wanted to reciprocate, so to speak, to reward Menachem for prophesizing this, so he took him into the royal service. And because he was in the royal service, he left the yeshiva, the court, to become involved in the royal service. So this opinion simply says, not that he went out to evil. The first opinion seemingly says, Abaye says, Imamish went out to, became like Acher, you know, an Apicatus. But the Rav says no. And it's interesting, Tanya Nami Ochi, so we learned in the Braise. Yotze Menachem went, Lavedus HaMelech, to service the king. For Yotze Imein, together with him went Shmeinim Zugis Tamidim. 80 pairs of disciples left together with him, Levushin Sirukin, in royal garb. Now it's interesting because some of Farshim learn, how can you have a Machlekes if he became an Apicatus who went to royal service? So they answer, that both Mepharshim say the same thing. He went into the king's service. Compared to what he was before, in the court, it was bad. But not that, God forbid, Menachem became an Apicatus. You have the same thing in Megillas Esther. Before Mordechai got involved in the whole thing over there, he was number three in the court. After he got involved in the politics of Achashverosh, they knocked him down to five. Because he wasn't involved in learning. So because he wasn't involved in learning, the Gemara says, they knocked him down. Because he stopped learning as much. The same thing with Menachem. As it is, because usually you hear Hillel and Shammai, you don't hear Hillel and Menachem. So it was Hillel and Shammai that we took over. Right. Now the Gemara says, Amir Rav Shammai bar Abba, Amir Rabbi Yechanan, Rav Shammai bar Abba said the name of Rabbi Yechanan, La'elam al teishuas kala beinach, a rabbinic prohibition should not seem minor in your eyes. Now people think, oh, it's only rabbinic, who cares? The Gemara says, no. Why? Shai smicha ein ele mishum shvus, smicha, that we learn about, you know, putting your hand on the animal is only rabbinic, and yet, v'nechl kubag deli hadeid, 5 generations, of rabbis argued about it. If it was such an unimportant thing, you wouldn't have 5 generations of scholars arguing over that point. So the Gemara says, Pshita, of course. I mean, you know, of course it's important. What do you mean? So the Gemara says, no. Shvus mitzvah itzrachai. He's teaching us another thing. You can't transgress a rabbinic prohibition even to do a mitzvah. Smicha is a mitzvah. Right? But doing it on Yom Tov is rabbinically prohibited. So the Gemara is teaching us not only is a shvus rabbinic prohibition forbidden. Here we're saying even more, that even for a mitzvah you can't do it. You're not allowed to do it. So the Gemara says, Harnami pshita, but that's also obvious. So the Gemara says, no. Afuki miman damed, this is to exclude and negate the view of the one that says that bismichu gufa pligi. That the argument itself is whether you need to do smicha on a korban chagiga at all. Meaning, some people say only on a voluntary korban does it say smicha.
Personal?
Yeah. How about korban chagiga, we learned before, is an obligatory korban. So there's an opinion that says you don't have to do smicha at all. So what our Mishnah is saying, no, you do have to do smicha, but you can't do it on Yom Tov because it's rabbinically forbidden.
You can't do smicha, you can't make a
korban. No, they say you'd bring the korban without the smicha.
But a personal korban, we learned...
But the korban chagiga is not personal.
How do you move it in Shabbos? How do you move a korban to mitzvah in Shabbos?
It depends. The korban that they had to bring is not mukzah. The chagiga that they had to bring is not mukzah. The question is, do you have to do smicha now? So if it's rabbinic, you don't do it. Listen, we find rabbinic laws can undo a biblical law. We discussed this when we were learning Pesachim. For instance, biblically, you're allowed to eat chametz until 12 o'clock at of Pesach. You can eat it, benefit, until 12 o'clock. After 12 o'clock, you cannot benefit from chametz. What does it mean, not benefit from chametz? It's not yours. The Torah says it's not yours anymore. Which means, if a man at 1 o'clock in the afternoon took a loaf of bread and gave it to a woman and said, you are consecrated to me with this loaf of bread according to the laws of Moshe and Yisrael, there's no valid kedushin. Why? Because you didn't give her anything. It's not your bread. When does that start biblically? At 12 o'clock. Chacham came along and said from 11 to 12 you're also not allowed to benefit. From 11 to 12 already, an hour earlier, you also cannot benefit. So what happens if at 11:30 a man gives a woman a loaf of bread out of Pesach and says, Areat mekudeshesli belechem zu kedas meshevi, so you are betrothed to me with this bread. The din is, it's not a valid kedushin. She's not married. So the Gemara asks, biblically, it's still yours. Biblically, this woman is a married woman. And the Chacham say she's not? How could that be? According to the Torah, it's still your bread. You give her the bread, it's a valid kedushin. The Chacham say it's not, so therefore they're going to uproot the din of the Torah. And the Gemara says the Chacham have the power. Because whoever does kedushin does it on the intent of what the rabbis want. Here the rabbis say it's no good, it's no good. But you found many times that Chachamim are so powerful, they can say, the Torah says yes, they say no. Even though according to the Torah, you should be able to do smicha, because it's only rabbinically forbidden, Chachamim come along and say, you're not doing it, and that's it, it's forbidden. You're not allowed to do it. Amir Rami Bar Chomer, so see this next piece of Gemara. Amir Rami Bar Chomer said, Shmami, now this then teaches us that smicha b'kol keche be'inin. That when you do smicha, you gotta do it with your whole fort, with your whole might. You can't just touch the animal, you have to actually lean on it. Why? The Isa could die to chle be'inin b'kol keche, because if you think you don't need to do it with all your might, my covet, what's the problem? Lismich, let him just touch the animal. Like we said before, you could touch an animal on Shabbos, Yom Tov. You can't lean on an animal on Shabbos or Yom Tov, because you might come to ride it. So if smicha is enough just touching it, let the guy do smicha by touching it. The fact that we say you don't do smicha, according to those opinions, it teaches us that you need to do smicha with your whole might. And therefore, the rabbis, one rabbi in each of those generations said you can't do it. Because smicha, you're using an animal in it, and you can't do it. Okay, we'll stop here because Gemara now continues the whole. Not done. Should I close it or?